Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to this week's Torah portion from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. This week's Torah portion is Nitzavim. It means you are standing. It is Deuteronomy 29, starting at verse 10 to chapter 30, verse 20. The Haftarah portion is Isaiah 61, verse 10 to 63, verse 9, and the Brit Hadashah is Romans chapter 10, verses 1 to 12. And let's say a prayer. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu Melech haolam. Blessed are you, O Lord, my God, King of the universe, Creator of all things. We thank you, Abba, for the fact that you are the Creator. You are our King. You are sovereign of the universe and of this earth, even though earth is in rebellion right now. Abba, we pray that your kingdom come and your will be done on this earth as it is in heaven where you are. And Abba, I just lift up this situation in Syria to you. It looks like the United States is going to war. It looks like that this is going to be one of those things that begin to fulfill your prophecies about the end of days. And Abba, I pray that your will be done in all cases, and that your people, wherever they are on this planet, the ones that keep your commandments and have the testimony of Yeshua, I pray that you will keep your hand on all of us, on all of your people. And I pray this in the name of Yeshua. Amen. Nitzavim is a little bit of an anomalous Torah portion. And what do I mean by anomalous? Well, let me just start out by telling you that Nitzavim is a very short Torah portion. It only has 40 verses. What does the number 40 remind you of? Well, the first thing that came to my mind is testing, and then the exile and the years that the children of Israel were in the wilderness getting from Egypt to the land. In fact, this Torah portion is all about them getting into the land and what's going to happen when they get there and when they get scattered. I mean, it's very short but to the point, and tells us, you know, it's pretty prophetic actually in this week's Torah portion. And did you also notice how many times the number 10 appears in the Torah portions? Now, I know the Bible was put together in such a way with verses and chapters and all that stuff with, you know, by those who canonized the Bible. The Torah scrolls were not numbered. They were not named. They were not, you know, there were no verses with numbers and stuff yet. The sages, the Jewish sages, put together these certain Torah portions separately from when the Bible was being chaptered and versed and numbered and all of that. Okay, but I find it to be just another miracle of the Lord that we have the 40 here, 40 verses in this Torah portion, and then in every one of the three parts of the Torah portion, you have the number 10. It's Deuteronomy 29, starting at verse 10. The Haftarah is Isaiah 61, starting at verse 10. And the Brit Hadashah is Romans chapter 10. You see what I'm saying? You see how many times that number 10 crops up there? Well, do you think that being in exile has anything to do with the 10 tribes? I'm just thinking out loud here. Maybe I'm just seeing things in the clouds, you know. I mean, yeah, look up there and see, is there a turtle in the sky? But I don't think so. I believe that the Lord is so sovereign that he is able to give us these clues. What do you think? Well, anyway, I'll leave that up to you. let's go and start reading. First of all, we're going to ask the question, who is responsible for keeping the Torah? Because this is, here says, Nitzavim means you are standing. So who is responsible for keeping the Torah? You, who are standing. Well, let's look and see, because none of us can claim that we were standing, or can we? Verse 10, you stand this day, all of you, before the Lord your God, your captains of your tribes, your elders and your officers, with all the men of Israel, your little ones, your wives, and your stranger that is in your camp, from the hewer of your wood to the drawer of your water. The Lord is using the emphasis of it being you, not him, but you who stood before him. Why? Because this is a time of oath taking. Remember, we've been to Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal, and as a matter of fact, at the giving of Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal, I believe that we have here that they are still standing at Mount Ebal. Nitzavim was, I believe, given to the children of Israel at that episode at Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. So they're still listening to this, and they are still in their oath posture. Do you see what I'm saying? And so he is referencing to them that all of them. Oh, and by the way, we have a lot of people in the Hebrew Roots community and among our Jewish brethren as well, who say that women, you know, and children are, you know, lesser people, you know, before the Torah. We don't get to speak about the Torah, and the husband makes the decisions for the wives, and there are even people in the Hebrew Roots community who are now teaching that it's because of the husband that the wife is able to get into the kingdom. But that's a whole other thing. I've only heard this, you know, recently, and I was astonished that, you know, we have this Mormonism coming into the Hebrew Roots community now. But there's been this diminution of everyone except the Hebrew males, you see. But here we have that it's your captains of your tribes, your elders, your officers, with all the men of Israel. So there you have all, you know, all the Hebrew males. And then guess what? It's your little ones, your wives, and guess who else? Your stranger. So strangers, people who are with us but who are not Hebrews yet, you see, they are responsible for this. This is why I have said over the years that the rule book that gets opened up at the judgment day is going to be the same rule book that you know, the Lord gave here in the Torah. The rule book is the same rule book for us as it is for the Gentiles who supposedly don't know anything. Well, Paul explains that, you know, he lets us know that the Gentiles know about the law because that they do at least keep part of it, you know. All societies have certain rules that are based upon the Torah, like, you know, not stealing, killing, you know, I'm sorry, murdering, because they're, you know, killing is different. Murdering is intentional. Killing may not be intentional. That's the difference. And no stealing, no adultery, those kinds of things, you see. So even if the Gentiles do that, and those are in the law, then they do have an idea about the law. And that is how the Lord can open up that book and use it at the day of judgment, you see. And so even the stranger, the ger in the camp, is considered to be standing there with them that day. So if they were standing there, what is the purpose of them standing there? And I'm talking about them, that generation now that was standing there at Mounts Gerizim and Mount Ebal? Well, it's because they are to establish the understanding of the oath that they are taking at Mount Ebal and Gerizim. Here's what it says in verses 12 and 13. That you should enter into covenant with the Lord your God and into his oath which the Lord your God makes with you this day, that he may establish you today for a people to himself, that he may be to you a God, as he said to you, and as he has sworn to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and to Jacob. See, a covenant requires two parties. And he's already made his oath to the forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But now he needs his people to take this oath, and he's establishing them here at Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim for his people, and telling them that their forefathers were Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and that he's taken his oath, and now this is their oath. So he is now establishing this two-party covenant. But wait a minute. We have to understand some more about this two-party covenant, because there is someone who is responsible for keeping the Torah that those people, that generation, made. That they're responsible for keeping the oath. Who is responsible for keeping the oath made by that particular generation? Well, let's go and read in verses 14 and 15. Neither with you only do I make this covenant and this oath, but with him that stands here with us today before the Lord our God, and also with him that is not here with us this day. Oh, those people made an oath to establish a particular covenant with the creator of the universe and the king of the earth and the God of Israel. They made that oath, and now you and I are responsible for upholding it. Now, I know that doesn't sound like it's fair. You know, my mom and dad, you know, made an oath to make a contract on something, and I have to pay the bill. Well, let's not look at it that way. Mom and dad made a contract with the bank to have a farm. And they've got, let's say, several acres, many acres. The farm is well established. But when mom and dad die, you inherit the farm, but you also inherit that mortgage. Do you see what I'm saying? You have an inherited obligation, and that obligation is for you and I to uphold the oath that that generation made before the Lord at Mount Ebal and Gerizim. And in verse 16, for you know how you have dwelt in the land of Egypt, and how we came through the nations which you passed by, and you have seen their abominations and their idols, wood and stone, silver and gold, which were among them, lest there should be among you a man, woman, family, tribe, whose heart turns away from this day from the Lord our God, to go and serve the gods of those nations, lest there should be among you a root that bears gall and wormwood. By the way, Israel did just this, and in the end, Israel is found doing that again. Remember, Revelation talks about the coming of wormwood. Not in the end will we see a root of gall and wormwood. We're going to actually see that bitter root called wormwood because of the idolatry that we have been committing. We are literally going to be given wormwood during the great tribulation. And it came to pass, when he heard the words of this curse, that he blessed himself in his heart, saying, I shall have peace, though I walk in the imagination of my heart, to add drunkenness to thirst. So when people disobey, is this not what they do, and not what they tell themselves? Of course it is. They will say to them, I have peace in my heart, I believe that what I'm doing is the right thing. But of course, we're not supposed to believe anything except the Lord, and we're not supposed to do anything except keep His commandments. Believing something within our own hearts is limited to believing the Lord and not our own thoughts. Verse 20, the Lord will not spare him, but then the anger of the Lord and his jealousy shall smoke against that man, and all the curses that are written in this book shall lie upon him, and the Lord shall blot out his name from under heaven. So this man, the one that says, I believe in my heart that I have peace, and I'm okay with the Lord. The Lord and I have a special relationship. I don't have to do these things. He understands my heart and all of that stuff. The Lord comes to a point with that man when he is no longer going to forgive. That's what it means to have your name blotted out from under heaven. He stopped forgiving you. And I know people don't like to hear that the Lord reaches a point when he will not forgive you anymore. But that's what it says here in verse 20. I didn't write this. The Lord said this. And the Lord shall separate him to evil out of all the tribes of Israel, according to the curses of the covenant that are written in this book of the law, so that the generation to come of your children that shall rise up after you, and the stranger that shall come from a far land shall say, when they see the plagues of that land and the sicknesses which the Lord has laid on it, and you've heard me talk about this far off land a long time ago, and in verse 23, and that this whole land thereof is brimstone and salt and burning, that it is not sown nor bears any grass, nor any grass grows therein, like the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah and Zeboim, which the Lord overthrew in his anger and his wrath. I believe that this far off land, because I believe this is a prophecy, I believe this far off land is likely the United States. I believe this is one of the first references to the daughter of Babylon, called Mystery Babylon, of whom America is the head of the global Mystery Babylon system. And so this far-off land is likely one that's going to suffer nuclear warfare. And that's the salt and brimstone and being burnt. And verse 24, even all the nations shall say, why has the Lord done this to the land? What does this mean, the heat of his anger? Then men shall say, because they have forsaken the covenant of the Lord God of their fathers, which he made with them when he brought them forth out of the land of Egypt. For they went and served other gods and worshipped them, gods whom they knew not and whom he had not given to them. So we believe here in the United States that we are part of the house of Joseph, which encompasses 10 of the tribes. And there's a lot of debate about that. But he says the people in this far-off land came out of Egypt, just like those folks that are standing there at Mount Ebal and Gerizim. And so if this is talking about an end-time event here, we could probably look to just about any of the Western nations, and this could apply. Although I do believe that America is going to suffer a special fate, and I believe that that special fate will be a nuclear one, and that she will never be inhabited again, just like it says in the prophets. And as a matter of fact, if you'll go over to Isaiah chapter 13, I will tie this far-off land here in Nitzavim with a faraway land in the future. Let's start at 13, verse 2. Raise a banner on a bare hilltop. Cry out loud to them, give a wave of the hand signaling for them to enter the gates of the nobles. I myself have commanded my consecrated ones, I have also summoned my warriors, those who rejoice in my triumph, to carry out my angry judgment. Listen! There's a noise on the mountains like that of a great multitude. Listen! There's an uproar among the kingdoms like that of nations massing together. The Lord of the heavenly armies is mustering an army for battle. They're coming from a faraway land, from the distant horizon. See, this prophecy here in Isaiah first appears back here in Nitzavim. And it says, the Lord and the weapons of his anger to destroy the entire land. That's talking about they're coming to destroy Israel. Wail out loud because the day of the Lord is near. It will come like destruction from the Almighty. Because of this, every hand will go limp and every man's courage will melt. They will be terrified. Pain and anguish will seize them. They'll writhe like a woman in labor. See, we're talking here about tribulation. They'll look aghast at one another and their faces will be ablazed with fear. Watch out, the day of the Lord is coming, cruel with wrath and fierce anger, to turn the entire inhabited earth into a desolation, to annihilate sinners from it. For the stars of the heavens and their constellations won't shine their light. The sun will be dark when it rises, and the moon won't shine its light. I'll punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I'll put an end to the pomposity of the arrogant and overthrow the insolence of tyrants. I'll make people scarcer than pure gold and mankind rarer than gold from Ophir. Therefore I'll make the heavens tremble. The earth will shake from its place at the wrath of the Lord of the heavenly armies at the time of his burning anger. This again is a reference to the Great Tribulation. They will be like a hunted gazelle or like sheep with no one to gather them. Each will turn to his own people and each will flee to his own land. Whoever is captured will be thrust through and whoever is caught will fall dead, killed by the sword. Their infants will be dashed to pieces before their eyes and their houses will be looted and their wives slept with. Watch out! I'm stirring up the Medes against them. Okay, the Medes. That is Iran, folks. He's stirring up Iran against them. Against who? Those who care nothing for silver and take no delight in gold. See, what we've got now is a particular economy created by the New World Order that has manipulated silver and gold. They don't care about the value of the silver, and they have no delight in the value of gold, you see. I believe that what we're looking at here is a prophecy about America. Let's keep reading. Watch out. I'm stirring up the Medes against them who care nothing for silver and take no delight in gold. Their bows will dash the young men to pieces. Who always goes to war? The young men. They'll show no pity on those not yet born. Well, we have that already with abortion. And their eyes will not spare children. And we see how the Muslims in particular kill the children for, you know, if they make a mistake in their prayer to, you know, their demon deity. Let's look at verse 19, though. Babylon, that jewel of kingdoms, the splendor and pride of the Chaldeans, will be like Sodom and Gomorrah when God overthrew them. What is the splendor and pride of the Chaldeans? It's talking about the ancient kingdom of Nimrod, you see. And Babylon, that jewel of kingdoms. In the end of days, there's going to be a kingdom that is the jewel of kingdoms. If America is not the earth's jewel of kingdoms today, I don't know what is. And here, she is called Babylon. And it says here that she will be like Sodom and Gomorrah when God overthrew them. Hey, wait a minute. We just got done reading that here in Nitzavim, where he says that they are this land far away is going to be overthrown like Sodom and Gomorrah. Babylon in the end of days, the jewel of kingdoms. I believe that's America, and I believe that it's foretold right here in Isaiah. And in verse 20 it says, it will never be inhabited or lived in through all the generations. No Bedouin will pitch his tent there. No shepherds will make their flocks lie down there. When it talks about Bedouins here, what does it mean? Well, a Bedouin is a wanderer. You know, there will be no people wandering around here. And there's other deeper meanings, but I want to get back to the Torah portion. I just wanted to show you why I believe America is this Babylon, that jewel of the kingdoms, and show you why I see America in this Torah portion. That's what I wanted to show you. And like it says in verse 25, in Deuteronomy 29:25, the men will say, because they have forsaken the covenant of the Lord God of their fathers. Has not America forsaken the covenant which he made with them when he brought them out of the land of Egypt? And people will say, well, we here in America, we didn't make a covenant with Jehovah Elohim when, you know, we didn't come out of Egypt. We came out of Britain. Oh, nay, nay. Because earlier he said his people, from the time that they took the oath in that generation to whatever generation finishes up on the earth, is responsible for that oath. And it's like they were standing there. Just like Paul said, don't be ignorant, brethren, that our fathers all passed through that cloud and all stood before the Lord and all drank of the spiritual drink and followed the rock. His father didn't pass through the Red Sea or get in through the, you know, see the pillar of cloud and fire at the time of Moses any more than mine did. But the idea is that we're supposed to all be we are all supposed to see ourselves as being before the Father here in Nitzavim. And verse 27, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against this land. Again, I'm saying that's America. To bring upon it all the curses that are written in this book. Oh my goodness. Do we not see this happening in America? I mean, it's happening all over the earth, but, I mean, every day I read the news and I see some new curse that is coming upon America. It's because America is full of men who are bringing on the curses. Just think about, for instance, in the medical field, the scientific efforts that are being made to genetically manipulate our crops, and look at the curses that alone is bringing upon America. And where did that originate? In America. 28, and the Lord rooted them out of their land in anger and in wrath and in great indignation, and cast them into another land, as it is this day. So, the people in that country, in that faraway land, wherever that is going to be rooted out of the land where they are, and they're going to be cast into another land, as it is this day with those people that are standing there. So, we can look forward to the day when we are going to be we're going to be cast out of here. Okay, verse 29. The secret things belong to the Lord our God, but those things which are revealed belong to us and our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. Getting back to this verse 28. When we get cast out of this land, some of us will be going back to Jerusalem. We'll be heading that direction. Just wanted to put that in there. Back to verse 29. The Torah is not intended to be secret, nor is it not understandable. Why? Because we're accountable to it. You know, in America, we're accountable for all the millions and tens of millions of laws that it has, and we don't even know what those are. Here in the Torah, we can know every law there is, and they're not secret. We can understand them. But in America, the laws are obscure. They're not understandable. They, you know, if you get taken to court, it takes a bunch of people to interpret the laws. No. We get to know the law, and the Lord speaks to us individually and directly about the meanings of those laws, if we will listen to Him. Chapter 30, verse 1. And it shall come to pass, when all these things are come upon you, the blessing and the curse, which I have set before you. Really? The Lord is telling us that we are going to experience both the blessings and the curse. So the Lord is prophesying, saying, you're going to get the blessing and you're going to get the curse, which I have set before you. Well, what He's telling us is that in future generations, there are going to be those generations that choose blessings and those generations that choose curses. And then He says, and you shall call them to mind among all the nations where the Lord has scattered you. Oh, wait a minute. We just learned about being scattered back here in Deuteronomy 29:28, and said that there's going to be a people out there in their land who has angered Him, and that He's going to cast them into a holy other land, another land besides the one that they're scattered to. And they're going to be just like the people that are standing before Him that day in the wilderness. You understand what I'm saying? This is people who are already scattered. We're going to get scattered again, folks. We're going to be scattered again. We're going to get the first scattering, which it talks about here in Deuteronomy 30, verse 1. And then we're going to get additional scattering from the land that we've been scattered to. And He shall call to them to mind among all the nations where the Lord your God has driven you. Well, He's going to scatter those people, He says to them, to all the nations of the earth. And so, yes, the Lord is telling us that it is He that has scattered us. But then in verse 2 it says, and when after all this has happened, when you return to the Lord your God, and do what? What does that mean? And shall obey His voice according to all that I command you this day. Oh, when we're out here in the exile and we're scattered everywhere on earth, when we return to obey the Lord's voice according to these commandments out here in the exile, oh, that's what that means. That out here in exile, we do the Sabbath. We do the feasts. We do the diet and the lifestyle. And now, who is that we that I'm talking about? Well, let's go back to verse 2 where it says, you and your children. And how are we to do this? With all our heart and with all our soul. You see, this first three verses of Deuteronomy 30, it's just incredible. It's so packed full right there. You could preach on that for a week. You see, because it's all about being, having experienced the blessings and experienced the curses, and you've been scattered. And while you're scattered, you have to start doing the things and obeying the Lord with all your heart and with all your soul. Oh, and by the way, doing it with all your heart and with all your soul means that you also understand that there are certain things that you cannot do. It's being obedient to not do the things that we don't have the right to do. Like, you know, animal sacrifices out here in our backyards, for instance. I'm just saying, you see. Verse 3, that then the Lord your God will turn your captivity and have compassion on you, and will return and gather you from all the nations where the Lord your God has scattered you. Oh my goodness, he scattered us. He's going to scatter us out of Mystery Babylon, and then he's going to come back and he's going to gather us back. And verse 4, even if the Lord had banished you to the ends of the heavens, the Lord your God will gather you from there, and he will bring you to the land your ancestors inherited. You'll possess it, you'll prosper, you'll greatly multiply more than your ancestors did. Then the Lord your God will circumcise both your hearts and those of your descendants, so that you can love him with your heart and with your soul, and therefore live. So you see, this word then means that something has happened in order to cause the next thing. So we're in exile, we've turned back to the Lord, we're doing everything according to our heart and soul, the best of our heart and soul, with all of our strength. And now he's going to do his part, because we've done something. See, first it was that he did something. He took an oath with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Okay? He took the oath, and then he got the second party in that oath, their descendants. Okay? But when you're in exile, how that works is you have to make the move first. So this time, we make the move, then he makes the move. You see what I'm saying? It just is reversed when you're in exile. See, they're in exile, yes, they're in the wilderness, but they're getting ready to go into the land. The first move was the fathers there in the beginning. At the end, the first move is the descendants' move. Verse 6, then the Lord your God will circumcise both your hearts and those of your descendants, so that you can love him with your heart and with your soul, and therefore live. Then the Lord your God will inflict all these curses on your enemies and on those who hate and persecute you. Oh, we are getting ready to see a lot of that hate and persecution. So now, return and obey the Lord your God and observe all his commands that I'm giving you today. Who is he talking there to? Is he talking to the children of Israel standing before him at Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal? Yes. Is he talking to that end time generation? Yes, he is. And the Lord your God will prosper you abundantly in all that you do, along with your children, your livestock, and the produce of your fields. For the Lord your God will again be delighted with you for good, just as he was delighted with your ancestors. I have a personal testimony of this. I guess sometime I ought to give it, but I don't want to take up time. But I can tell you that when you return to the Lord, you know, I'm not saying that everything goes smoothly and that you never have any temptations and that you never have any troubles, but I am saying that you do prosper in what you put your hand to. If you obey him and keep his commandments and statutes that are written in this book of the law, and if you return to him with all your heart and soul, indeed, these commands that I'm giving you today are neither confusing nor unattainable for you. See, they're not confusing. The laws are not confusing. They're very straightforward. They're just simple instructions. Do this, don't do that. It's just very simple. They aren't in the heavens so that you have to ask who will go up to the heavens, you know, for us to get those and so that we can hear it and act on it. No, they're not far away. Oh, in America, you have to go to the Supreme Court, you see, but not here. Not with the Lord's laws, not with his instructions. And they aren't beyond the seas either, so that you have to ask who will cross the sea and get it for us so we can hear it and act on it. No, The word is very near you. It's within your mouth and heart for you to obtain. Look today, I have set before your life and what is good, along with death and what is evil. That's why I'm commanding you today to love the Lord your God by walking in his ways and by observing his commands, statutes, and ordinances, so that you may live long, increase, and so that the Lord your God may bless you in the land that you're about to enter and possess. But if you turn your heart away and do not obey, but instead if you stray away to worship and serve other gods, I'm declaring to you today that you will surely be destroyed. Listen, the United States, Israel, and the Palestinians recently entered into a mutual covenant with Allah. They did that on July 31st, and I'm telling you, there's a paradigm shift going on in Israel right now, and I believe with all my heart that that is why the Lord is unleashing this Syrian mess now. This is part of his punishment to the world, to the United States, to Israel. And notice that it's the United States and Israel that are going to pay this price with Syria, Iran, and Russia. See? Yes, Syria and Iran are in covenant with the Palestinian deity as well. But there are two different schools. There's Sunni school and there's Shiite school. And they fight with themselves. And so we really and truly are fully engaged in the sectarian war between the Sunnis and the Shiites. America is now a full-fledged Sunni Muslim Brotherhood Salafi school of Islam country, because she is now in covenant with Allah. And those two different schools, the Sunnis and the Shiites, are duking it out with each other. And the Lord is bringing this destruction upon these people because they went into covenant with that demon that we also call Lucifer, Satan, the adversary, the enemy. Those are the true names of that demon deity of Islam. But if you turn your heart away and do not obey, but instead you stray away to worship and serve other gods, I'm declaring to you that you will surely be destroyed. You won't live long in the land that you're crossing the River Jordan to enter and possess. By the way, it's only been 70 years that Israel has been in the land. They had to fight for every piece of land that they got in there, and now it's about ready to get taken away from them. I call heaven and earth to testify against you today. Why does the Lord call heaven and earth to testify? Well, because beyond the Lord himself, there is no one capable of giving such a testimony against mankind. I've set life and death before you today, both blessings and curses. Choose life, that it may be well with you and your children. Love the Lord your God, obey his voice, and cling to him, because he is your life, even your long life, so that you may live in the land that the Lord promised to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that is the word that he gave to that generation before they went into the land that time, in that generation, 3,500 years ago. And this is the word that he's given to us here in the end of days, to this generation that's getting ready to go and take the land, just as they were back then. Choose life. Choose Jehovah. Choose the Lord. And teach your children. Obey his voice and cling to him. He is your life. And oh, by the way, he is Yeshua. He is Jehovah. He is the everlasting Father. Even our long life comes from him. Our long life. And that we may live in the land that he promised to us. You see, our living there depends on our obedience. I know nobody wants to hear that, you know, we have to be obedient to get something. Our salvation doesn't hinge on this. You know, it doesn't hinge on the law. You know, we don't keep the law to get salvation, but we do keep the law to get the promise of being able to live in the land. And I'm telling you, if you get scattered out of the land again, you're a dead person, because the Lord ain't going to forgive you. There's coming a time when judgment is coming and not forgiveness, folks. And I think we're very close to it. But you and I are so blessed that the Lord has given us the opportunity to serve Him, to keep His Shabbat, to keep His feast, to keep His diet, to keep His laws and understand them. You cannot get any more blessed than that. And I do hope that this teaching has been a blessing to you. Shabbat Shalom.